Hello, business building warrior. Thank you for joining me for another episode of Silent Sales Machine Radio. We've blown past over 800 episodes now, 6 million downloads. That's incredible. This is your show. We make this show for you. The purpose of this show is to help you create more streams of income using the internet creatively. And of course, we talk about most episodes around here. We talk about the students who are succeeding using the strategies we teach. We interview them, we dig into their stories, so you can be surrounded by, at this point, hundreds of people that you can get to know quite intimately. You can even reach out to them and contact them. In many cases, they're in our Facebook group, they use their full name and their face, and you can reach out to these folks. Hundreds of episodes like that. Pretty incredible. I don't see anything else like that in all of e-commerce, so I'm pretty proud of what we've built here. But today's episode is a little different. It's not a testimonial success story episode from our proven Amazon course students. It is an interview between Brian and Robin Joy Olson. You've heard them several times, several months now. They've jumped on about once a week. Typically, we publish their episodes middle of the week on Wednesday or so. And it's the common questions we're hearing from our coaching students. If you didn't realize it, we've got about 60 coaches on our team who've all built beautiful businesses using the strategies we teach here. And they've offered up some of their time to help others who are serious, ready to make a commitment, and ready to go forward faster in their e-commerce adventure. Brian and Robin Joy are two of the great coaching directors on that team of 60. So they really know what our students are asking about, some of the challenges they're facing. Today's general topic is the easy button, that magic formula, that one little thing that I'm missing. Quite often we'll have people say, yeah, okay, I understand what you're teaching, but I feel like I'm missing that one little thing that would get me over the edge. And kind of like the movie Kung Fu Panda came to mind to me while I was listening to today's episode. If you remember that movie, the first one, which they've made way too many of them at this point, in my opinion. But the first one, that one magic thing, he unrolls the magic scroll and he's thinking he's going to see the secret and it's just nothing. There's no big secret. That's the secret. Everybody thinks that there's a big secret they're missing. There isn't one. Persistence with a proven system, constantly learning, trying new things, experimenting, expanding your relationships, building systems as you go, knowing there's going to be plenty of blood, sweat, tears, risk, work, sacrifice needed, because anything in life worth having requires all of those things, right? Think about it for a minute. You'll see it's true. So yeah, business is no different. E-commerce is no different. But what we have here is a system and a community and an opportunity unlike anything the world has ever seen before. Amazon has helped create more millionaires than any other company in world history. They've got underserved, underfilled shelf space at hundreds of distribution centers around the United States. Why not help fill those shelves and sell products, knowing that your worst case scenario is, if you follow the systems we teach, you're breaking even on a few test items that didn't work out. Your best case scenario is you're building a beautiful business in one of the hottest niche markets. One of the biggest paradigm shifts in all of economic history is going from traditional retail to online retail, and it's in its infancy. And that's the kind of questions we tackle around here. We'd love to have you join us. This is your first episode. We'd love to have you join us for 5, 10, 20, 30 other episodes. Listen to a good handful of those interviews, and I think you'll start to think to yourself, okay, these people are doing it. I think I can do this too. But again, there's no secret magic formula, one little box you have to check that suddenly sets you free into the land of success in anything. And you should know that, right? I'm not telling you anything you probably didn't already know, instinctually at least. Well, one big announcement before we jump into today's content and Brian and Robin Joy take over here in just a moment. Our annual conference is coming up. This is the 12th time we've gathered together as a community. We would love to have you there. If this is your first time considering attending our live event, we've actually got a free pass for you if funds are tight. Of course, we love to have folks help us pay the bill. This thing takes a lot of commas and zeros to pull together. So if you can help us foot the bill, we'd sure love for you to pick up a ticket. But if you just can't quite justify the expense of a ticket, but you want to come experience hundreds of people who have used the internet creatively to launch and grow the businesses of their dreams with an emphasis on Amazon, Walmart, some of the other great strategies you've heard us talk about on this show, We do a little bit of everything around here. But if you want to be around those kind of people, May 23rd to 25th in Orlando, Florida, we'd love to have you join us. There's one website that has all the details on our scholarship, on our live stream options. If you can't be there in person, be sure to lock in your live stream as soon as possible because prices do go up on that. By the way, if you get live stream, that means you get all of the professionally captured breakout sessions, over 40 breakout sessions at this event. You're absolutely going to love this event if you can be a part of it. If you're brand new and you've never made a penny online, you'll love the event. If you've been around a while and you're a seasoned veteran and you're just looking to maybe make a few more connections, I promise it's worth it. We've got several people there with multiple seven-figure businesses, both teaching and learning. So it's an environment for anyone who's interested in e-commerce at any level. We'd love to have you there. The website is three words, these three words. Ready? The Proven Conference. Get over to theprovenconference.com. See all the details. See a little message from our keynote speaker. Check out some of the topics that we're adding. And we're going to be getting real excited here soon because it's coming at us fast. May 23rd through 25th, 2024. Hope to see you there. All right. That's enough of an announcement from me. Let's jump over, take it away, Brian and Robin Joy.
Welcome back to Silent Sales Machine Radio. We are your co-hosts. I'm Brian.
And I'm Robin Joy.
And this is Coach's Corner. Great questions this week. Yeah. Come to us courtesy of the Kickstart program.
Yes, yes. Right? I get this question a lot in Kickstart.
Yes. All right, what is it?
The question is, can you tell me the formula to find an ASIN that'll be profitable for me?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. If it was like, you know, algebra, we could all just figure it out.
Yeah. Yeah. There's no magic formula. Sorry, guys. There is no magic formula. It takes testing. We have items that we are sourcing and finding out, deciding whether we're going to test or not. And we have items that we're testing. They're in, inventory is in there. We're looking to see what's going to happen for us. That's where we're going to find the ASINs that bring us profit. We don't know yet until we test it. So we've got to test as many as we can to find as many as we can that make profit.
Right. But we can stack the deck in our favor of those ASINs that we are testing. Mm-hmm. Right. And we're going to talk a little bit about that today.
Okay. Right. We will. But let's first get to the basics. Mm-hmm. I think this is what you call the pre-flight check lately.
I like the pre-flight check.
Yeah.
You gave me the visual for this. Like neither one of us are a pilot.
No.
But as a pilot, I'm pretty sure you have to go inspect the plane. You have to walk around it and give it a visual inspection. Make sure there isn't a flat tire. There isn't a crack in the windshield. Mm-hmm. That would be bad.
That would be bad.
There's no obvious damage to the fuselage or whatever it is that you do as a pilot when you're going around the plane to say, yes, this looks flight worthy, right?
Yeah. This is something that my dad made me do when I was first learning to drive.
Like, yes.
Make sure the tires are good. Make sure there's nothing stuck in your grill. Make sure that
Nobody stole your license plate.
Nobody stole your license plate. Right.
So you're doing all of this before we even actually get in the car and try to start this thing up.
Okay. So what is that for an ASIN, Brian? Can we kind of identify some of those things? Again, you know, these are not all inclusive, but these are the main ones that we like you to get in the habit of looking for.
Well, before we get, we have to have a car in the driveway. If we're going to stick with the car analogy in order to start on the pre-drive check.
Right. I was jumping ahead a little bit there. Let's figure out what we're analyzing first.
Yeah. The last mile is a term that's used in business when it comes to specifically like to delivery or getting some work done. That is the last little bit. Example I like to use is when, let's say, like we subscribe to a food service delivery called Home Fresh. Mm-hmm. And Home Fresh delivers boxes to every major city or every city, I don't know how many different cities across the country, every week. But it's a one-to-one delivery system, or it's one-to-many for them, but then it becomes even one-to-many more once it gets to the city. So, for example, if the headquarters of Home Fresh were in Indianapolis, and they shipped out all of their food boxes to all these different cities. So big, you know, hundreds of boxes go to Denver.
Yeah.
Then once it gets to a warehouse in Denver, then that last mile is getting it from the warehouse then to the doorstep.
Right.
Right? That's the hardest part, usually.
Yeah, because getting that one box that matches that one doorstep.
It's yeah, right? The lines of travel from Indy to Denver for semi trucks, easy to handle.
But you take a whole bunch of them at
once. The semi trucks don't drive down residential streets, at least not usually. Right?
Right.
So we use a more agile, more a service that's it's easier to get packages from that warehouse location to the doorstep.
Okay, so how does that apply to the ASIN?
Well, what I'm saying, I'm just trying to paint the picture of the level of difficulty that it is, yes, that last, you know, from the warehouse to the doorstep is arguably the hardest part.
Yes.
So for us, when we are doing ASIN, when we are evaluating ASINs, we have to, the last mile for us is matching up the ASIN with the source. If we can match the ASIN with the source, then we can go on and apply some frameworks that will help stack the deck in our favor so that we can choose the best, some of the best ASINs to test and then identify the ones that are profitable.
Right. And I explain that sometimes in the way that you have what you're looking for is an ASIN and a source that match. Sometimes you have to look a little while before you find something, but what the ultimate goal is to find an ASIN that you're approved to sell and that is made correctly, passes whatever requirements you have on it, and a source that matches that ASIN. Whether you get the source first or the ASIN first doesn't matter. There's not a shortcut one way or the other. It doesn't matter. But those two things have to, you call that bridging the gap, right?
Yeah, that bridging the gap for us is the hardest part. And here's why it's the hardest part, because it has not been effectively automated or leveraged with AI yet. So it takes human eyeballs to check the box to say, yes, this is a match.
Well, and in a way, I kind of think that's good, because if it were automated completely, then it would be very hard for us all to compete in a space that's already, you know, figured out. And
even with a billion ASINs,
even
if it was all, if the work was already done for you.
Yeah.
Okay.
But it cannot be. Why? Because every ASIN is different in some way. Every ASIN is going to react differently. Every ASIN is going to react differently in your business than in my business. It's going to affect my book of business differently than it does yours. It's going to be, you know, purchased. It's going to be priced. It's going to be, everything is going to be different when it's in my business compared to any other business, right?
Yeah, in terms of the results.
It's impossible really to automate that part.
Well, what I was getting at was the automation of the matching. We know that there are tools out there that try to do that, but there's still a ton of mismatches. The best way, and it's not foolproof. The best way to do it, though, is with our own eyeballs.
Yes.
Right? And our own analysis. And that's why that the distance between either side of that gap may be small, but because it takes human interaction, that's the long pole in the tent. Right. That's the last mile of service delivery.
And so we should expect that. That would be the part that's tough, especially in the beginning, right?
And, you know, I say this all the time. This is why your competitive advantage is that skill set.
Yes.
Being able to match those as quickly as possible and then using a framework to help you identify whether you want to test that ASIN or not. The first part of that framework is the pre-drive check, the pre-flight check.
Okay. All right. So what is the pre-flight check for an ASIN?
Well, the first thing I think you mentioned it was the, am I approved?
Am I approved?
Am I approved to sell this? Because if you're not approved, you can move on, come back to it later, or you can apply during the evaluation process and get approved. But if you don't get approved, then you just have to move on.
Right. So you have to be approved, whether you get approved right then or you are already approved. So you have to be approved to sell the ASIN.
Yep. Another one that came up this week in another coaching session was the matching of the brand.
Yes. So very important.
This is obviously important. In today's Amazon world,
yes,
the brand has to be an exact match. Mm-hmm. So you don't want anything that's misspelled, maybe innocently enough even, or you don't want to sell on generic listings that aren't really generic.
Right.
You want to make sure that brand is a good match.
In fact, on a generic listing, if you didn't create the listing, you won't be able to sell on it anyway. So don't go buy that.
Right.
Just if it says generic, move on for sure.
Yep. We need to make sure that it's spelled correctly. It's not generic. It's a good match.
Right. For the brand. The brand field of the ASIN, not just in the title.
Them also like to make sure that there's like multiple points on a listing. Mm-hmm. So without drawing it out, we've got the title, we've got the bullets, we've got the images, and we've got the customer feedback. I like to reconcile all four of those things. Make sure that What's in the picture is matching what's in the title. Making sure what's in the title matches what's in the bullets.
Yeah.
So for example, if the title says, you know, 4 ounce pack of four, the picture says one. I mean, the picture is just a picture of one. Mm-hmm. And the bullets don't necessarily describe a quantity. Mm-hmm. Then the next place I'm going to is the customer feedback to see what are customers experiencing here. And sure enough, on one we were looking at earlier this week, there was a lot of comments around, I expected to get four and I only got one.
Yeah.
Because people misread it. Sourcers, people who are resellers misread it mm-hmm. or assumed that it was mm-hmm. the best deal for them. So they, you know, only supplied one unit on that listing that says four pack in the title.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's true. And I do recommend anytime there's any confusion or you're not sure about how many an ASIN has or about anything about an ASIN, check those comments because the customers will tell you if they're not getting what mm-hmm. they expected to get. And they'll ask the question too. If it's confusing, they'll ask the question. I like to pretty much stay away from confusing listings in the beginning till I have a little experience. But yeah, that's a place you can go. But these things, checking the brand, checking all of those bullet points and everything, make sure it's not confusing. Those are part of the pre-flight check. What else is in there?
Let's see.
We want to make sure that we're not on the sourcing side. We want mm-hmm. to make sure that we're not purchasing from a third-party seller. Don't purchase from eBay. And this is on community listings. Now, there are other strategies. We're talking about the replant strategy. Mm-hmm. We're talking about selling on listings that are already there. That we don't own the brand of. So we want to make sure we're not buying from eBay or Walmart has third-party sellers. We don't mm-hmm. want to buy from third-party sellers on Walmart. To see the difference, we want to make sure it's sold and shipped by Walmart or pick it up in the store. We don't want to buy from Mercari or Poshmark or...
Poshmark.
Poshmark.
I'm the one. I'm the one who makes up words.
I didn't do it on purpose, though. You do it on purpose.
Okay.
Yeah. And then there are some other websites you have to watch out for that are, you know, they're out there as third-party sellers to sell to other resellers. So don't buy from them either. So no third-party sellers. Check the brand. Check the whole listing for anything that might be confusing. And then I would also say make sure that you can supply everything that is in that unit. Check the pictures. Again, check mm-hmm. the pictures. Check the title. Check the bullet points. If it is a bundle of items, it needs to have everything that's in that unit you have to be able to supply or you do not want to sell on that ASIN. Likely will have a different brand name, but if it doesn't, check that out before you go to fill that. All right, so I think that's about all on the pre-flight check. There are probably some other things.
Well, one of the things I just want to bring up is I get the question a lot because of the very first advanced Keepa sourcing module that went into the Proven Amazon course. Mm-hmm. I said like, hey, it only takes like a minute to do this.
Yeah.
And of course, this is after we're trained up. When you train yourself up and then you get your VA trained up, you can very quickly do this work with your eyeballs in a matter of seconds.
Yes.
What can take a potentially a little bit longer is two things. Number one, finding the source. So we all know that there are, you know, tons and tons of great ASINs out there, millions of great looking ASINs out there. Oh, I want to sell on this ASIN so bad. But I'm telling you, the ASIN doesn't look good unless you have a source to go with it. I don't care how good the Keepa chart is, how great the pictures are on the listing, how many times that thing sells, it doesn't matter. Unless you've got a source, it doesn't matter, right? Okay. So finding the source then can potentially take more time.
But be careful not to take too much time. Were you going to go there?
Exactly. My whole point of that was you don't, because I told the story. Yes, I spent weeks looking for the rock candy supplier because I was so in love with this listing. That is a complete waste of time mm-hmm. for me. It was at the time anyway. So there, you have to draw the line somewhere. And what I suggested is it takes about a minute. You go to Google Shopping or your browser of choice and you Google look up the products that you're looking for and see what results come back. And if it's at the stores that you like to source at and pick a couple, right? If you source at Lowe's, Meijer, Target, Walmart, and Aldi, those five stores, well, then just if it doesn't show up in those five stores, then you're moving on.
That's the way I did it in the beginning.
Yeah.
It was very helpful because I wasn't going to so many different places, even online, too.
It's great because these are stores that you already know and trust.
Yes.
And if the product is there, then you don't need to worry about whether that's an authorized reseller of that product. These are known, these are national, if not internationally known stores that are authorized to carry these products that you right. know, so long as you are buying from non-third-party sellers, mm-hmm. right? Directly from the source.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So once you've got that list of suppliers, then it can really take just a very few seconds to, if you've identified everything on the listing looks good and you've identified a source, then there's these other frameworks that you can implement to help stack the deck in your favor when you're going to test.
Right. So let's take a picture of that, Brian. Mm-hmm. So we need to match up a source with an ASIN. We've established that, right? Mm-hmm. So that's going to take, you know, less and less time. Definitely less time if you have certain sources that you're applying to these ASINs for sure. Or if you're sourcing the source first and going then to yeah. see if you can find an ASIN. So that'll get faster and faster as you go through. So you've got to match up the bridge the gap mm-hmm. between source and ASIN. Secondly, we have to do the pre-flight check, you know, making sure we've got the right kind of seller that we're purchasing inventory from. Check the brand, check the confusing listing issues, and make sure that you can supply everything in the listing.
Yes.
Then we have a framework for you to start with because you don't have experience. But remember, it is not a magic formula. It is more like how to make fire, right? What do you need to make fire?
Three elements.
Yeah, you need fire. You need fire to make fire. That'll work too. I see a different analogy there.
It's the old got to have money to make money thing. Well, darn it.
Yeah. Shoot, I guess that's not going to work. Uh-huh. So you need heat, uh-huh. you need fuel, and you need oxygen to make fire, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay, so this framework or the three-step check that we talk about, it doesn't say exactly what fuel you need, exactly
what temperature,
source of heat, what temperature,
how much oxygen.
No, it says you need heat, uh-huh. oxygen, and fuel,
yep.
right? So it's going to be kind of a judgment call about which ones of those are how much. Now, we do give you some data points to go by to start with, but it is not a magic formula. It's a framework. We want to make sure that we start people with making sure it's moving fast enough. The ASIN is moving fast enough so that we can make our decision quickly and get our capital back with profit as soon as possible. And we want to make sure that our capital that we invest in this is protected in some way. No guarantees. But, you know, making sure that if it doesn't go well, we're not probably going to lose money. So those two things are really important when you have no book of business. You're just starting out at your first shipment, your first five shipments. These things are going to be important, but it's just a framework. How fast that is up to you. We give you some suggestions, but you have to decide how much tolerance you have for how far below you're willing to risk is up to you. How far below your break-even price if it doesn't work out. And I'll tell you, the more you test, the more you can tolerate a loss mm-hmm. because the more chance you have of more of making money to make up for that loss. So we like to test as many as we possibly can, right?
Or because five a week.
Mm-hmm. Five a week works. It really does. But less than that, and you're a little bit riskier because you don't have those economies of scale, right? Mm-hmm. That's about as small as we've seen it be able to go and still work out. But everybody's experience is different. The testing part is the validation, though. It's not the which ones did I choose to test that tell me whether it's going to be profitable. Those are the ones that tell me it's going to be okay to test this even if it doesn't work out.
Right.
That tells me it's a good test, but it is a test. And the reason it's not a... let's see if it's profitable or not. Let's see if it's test worthy or not. Is because test means will it or will it not work? There should be two possible results.
Pass or fail.
Pass or fail, right? So testing has a lot more benefits than the pass or fail. So we want to try to find ASINs that we can replenish that bring us profit, right?
Yes.
However, just the testing process, if we protect our capital and don't make any money, but we don't lose money, have a whole lot of benefits in itself. Right?
Yeah, the benefits of testing we talked about before, or we've talked about a lot and we'll continue to talk about, because it really can help you get your achieve liftoff. That's the whole goal here, is to get liftoff, right? So the number one thing you're going to get as a benefit is the experience.
Yeah.
If you don't ever test, because trust me, there are hundreds of data points that you could evaluate.
Yes.
When it comes to looking at listings, when it comes to looking at Keepa, when it comes to looking at sources, I mean, you could spend days doing an evaluation and before you ever bought anything to test. This is what we call the analysis paralysis.
Yes.
And this is why we try to simplify it as much as possible. What's the most meaningful, most impactful data points that we can be that we can focus on that will still allow us to find success, so that we can test in batches in shorter periods of time instead of having to look at 125 data points before we make a decision about whether we're going to test something or not, because you'll never get anything done that way.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that makes it shorter time, that helps you be more efficient in your sourcing, is to get that time down. Don't pay attention to things that you don't really need to know or can't really help you until you have inventory in the ASIN.
Right.
Most of the things that people worry over, they really can't know until they have inventory in there. Even if there's one or two, you get a whole lot more information if you have inventory in that ASIN. So don't pass them up just because, oh, well, it might be this, or I've seen that, or somebody who's doing a completely different model didn't do well with that. You have to test what's going to work for you, or you will not know.
And the biggest benefit of testing is experience. And you can, the experience of actually being in the game is far more beneficial than looking at 125 data points before you ever make a decision.
Yep.
And just having a couple of units in stock, all of a sudden now these different data points become much more meaningful to you.
Absolutely.
And so that's why we like to say it's only a test. We have protected ourselves to the greatest extent possible to get into this. And hey, worst case scenario, we're going to break even.
Yes. In most cases, no guarantees, but if we protect our capital before we test and make that the testing criteria, then we're going to do pretty well in testing. We're going to get all these benefits of testing without worrying about our money so much.
Right. Another benefit is we get to increase our account health score.
Yes. Very important.
Which is really important if we come up with any compliance issues on our account. We want to be at 208 at minimum, right? 208 account health score, just in case something happens, which is super easy to achieve. We want to get seller feedback. That's another great thing that will help our seller metrics. We also then, by testing, have the opportunity to make a profit.
Yes.
And you had a note here. I'm not exactly sure what you meant by that, so I'm going to let you take that one.
Where will my inventory be?
Yeah.
So you can see where your inventory is after Amazon places it and puts it in FC Transfer and does all that thing. You can, there are reports, and we're not going to get into the details of that, but that tell you where your inventory is. So then you can kind of check, you know, who is that close to, what zip codes is that close to, and what are they seeing? They might be seeing you as the featured seller, as opposed to what you see where you are. So you can't know that. You can't know anything about that unless you have inventory in the ASIN.
Yep.
All right.
All right. So then what we want to do, I keep saying stack the deck in our favor.
Yes.
Right? One of the ways that we do that is we set up these safety nets around us.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that.
All right. So we want to test, but we want to test as safely as we can. Right? So we don't want to have to worry about whether we had every data point right and everything is... you know, how many offers is there? Has it ever, you know, how many is it selling? We don't really know. We know how many offers, what the pricing is. We don't know.
We know how many keep a drop, sales drops.
Yes, but we don't know exact number of sales. In many, many, many cases, it's more than the sales rate drops. But that's one that we can count on. The point is, we want to do something to make us feel comfortable testing that, even if we got it wrong. Right?
Yes.
Even if it's not going to make profit. And what that is for us is to make sure that your break-even point, after you have spent all your expenses and fees, how much it would cost you to sell it, that the price is not dipping below that for more than 7 to 10 days at a time in a 90-day period. That's where we start people. Mm-hmm. But you can make up those rules yourself if you say, you know, I want it to be within a 30-day period or so. Test that. Just get the test in. That's the point. You've protected yourself quite a bit by looking at that data point. You've protected yourself quite a bit by making sure it's going to turn over quickly and you're not going to have to sit there for a long time with your money out before you decide if it was good or bad. So get those tests in.
Right. Basically, you covered two things there. Number one, we want to make sure that we're on a listing that has sufficient sales velocity so that we can get the results as quickly as possible. Mm-hmm. Right. Everyone wants to have $1 million business in the next 3 months.
Yes.
In order to make that happen, we have to start getting results back as quickly as we can. Mm-hmm. That's going to mean choosing faster moving ASINs. Mm-hmm. These are typically 30 or 40 sales rank drops per month or mm-hmm. more. Right. Mm-hmm. That's kind of the minimum.
One more.
Mm-hmm. And I love that Jim posts examples in Facebook group, and we'll see other people do it too, where like the drops are much lower than that. Mm-hmm. Totally fine. So long as your expectations are okay, right. That if this only has 8 drops a month, that it may not matter how low you take your price. You still may not be able to sell it because there just isn't sufficient sales velocity. Mm-hmm. I mean, you'll sell it eventually, but mm-hmm. sell it within the time period that you were expecting.
On some of those, you will. Mm-hmm. On some of those, you won't. So we're just, like you said, stacking the deck in our favor.
Yeah.
Right? So there is no magic formula. Just because it has 30 sales rank drops doesn't mean it'll sell within 30 days. Mm-hmm. It doesn't.
Yeah.
We're just trying to give ourselves the best
opportunity. For success.
Exactly. Yes. Exactly. From experience that we've had.
And then the second thing that you mentioned was the capital protection. Mm-hmm. We want to make sure that our all-in costs, after we cover prep fees, after we cover supplies, after we cover Amazon fees, after we cover inbound shipping, after we cover placement fees, all that kind of stuff, that if there is a buy box on this listing, that we have evidence that the buy box has stayed above that break-even price. There's the 7 to 10 day period, which I totally
it doesn't go below for more than seven to ten days at a time.
Yeah. And why do we say 7 to 10 days?
Well, because I'm going to be in there for 30 days on my test, likely. I can wait out. So it's going to pop back up for me. Mm-hmm. Evidence says it's going to pop back up for me. So even if it's going below every other day, it's still popping back up in time that I could catch it on the top. Mm-hmm. Right. So that's why we kind of make that distinction in the below part to give it just one more chance that you can test that ASIN. Because we're looking for reasons to test, yes. Not reasons not to test.
Right. We don't want to get tied wrapped around the axle mm-hmm. and never test anything, because then we're never going to get the results that we need to build a large business
that exactly
gets us what we want.
Exactly.
The things that we want. Car payments, house payments, job replacement.
Yes. So there is no magic formula. Right?
There isn't. There's one more thing I think you had here that I really wanted to cover.
Oh, yes.
Which was around the amount of capital that you're putting into any individual ASIN should be, if we're sticking to this inch deep, mile wide approach. Like, we're not going all in. How many times do I see, I bought 30 of these because it was such a good deal? Mm-hmm. You don't know if it was a good deal.
Right.
When you bought them, you only know it was a good deal after they sold. And if they didn't sell or they sold below your break even, then it wasn't a good deal. So right. I don't care how many that you got, right?
Right.
So let's keep that your risk spread as evenly as we can. Right. Knowing that some ASINs, because they cost more, are going to potentially, you know, be a few percentage points higher potentially than some other stuff in your inventory. But we're spreading our risk as much as we can. That's what we're looking to do there.
Yeah. And I get the sense that there's a word that you're going to make up coming out of this sometime.
No, there isn't.
Okay. But yeah, that is absolutely true. As your book of business grows, that amount of inventory that you're putting in total is going to be much larger. So the significant amount in one ASIN can be larger, but not until you have a foundation built do you want to put very much in any one ASIN. Once you have, you're replenishing more than you're testing. Mm-hmm. Once you make that turn in your book of business, then that's when it starts growing and you can go a little deeper and a little deeper. Never do we want to go too deep in this model, but you know, we all have our own limits. We all have our own tolerance for that. And we have to make sure we understand what are our risks, even after we have our book of business established.
Yes.
Right?
So if we were to summarize this today, basically, there is no magic formula to determine which ASIN is going to be profitable for you.
Correct.
It could look good on paper. Mm-hmm. The experience is the magic.
Right. You have to find out for yourself. You have to do your own due diligence to find out what's going to work in your business, because your business is going to be different than someone else's business. The mix is going to be different. The impact of any one ASIN is going to be different. So to compare everything to other people's businesses is not really going to work for you. Yes, take advice. Take things that have worked for other people and try them out to see if they will work for you. Mm-hmm. But everyone has a little different slant on this, so there's not just one way to do this. You have to find your way in your mix's business and what's available to you. So, no magic formula in finding an ASIN that's profitable.
Yeah, I don't think there are many magic formulas in this business. Mm-mm. There's not a magic formula to say this is a profitable ASIN.
No.
There's not a magic formula to say this is how many items I should send in my test.
No.
There's not a magic formula to determine how many items I should replenish.
No. Or if I should replenish or not.
Or whether, I mean, that's easier, I think, to determine, like, that I've made profit on it.
Right.
And then it's easier for me to make.
But it's not a magic formula. How right. much profit?
Right, right.
Yeah,
you'll have to figure this out. The experience being the most important part of this.
Yes.
And diligence is key.
Oh, dear. Another key.
No, yeah, just like it's the repetitive, it's the repetitions, it's the execution that's mm-hmm. going to make this much more clear to you in your yes. business. And the best that anyone can do here is to provide some frameworks, right? Mm-hmm. Give you a recipe that has worked. Here are the ingredients that you need to make fire.
Right.
We don't know how big you're going to make that fire.
Right. And you don't know how big, if the ingredients that you have, you don't know how big that fire is going to be mm-hmm. or how long it's going to last. The only way to find that out is to make a fire.
Right.
Right. You got to test it. That's the point. So we want to make people feel like you can test. You need to test. That's the important part. Test. Mm-hmm. See what happens. See what the results are. Then make your decisions as to whether that was good or not great or what you can learn from that.
Yeah.
Right.
All right, let's wrap this up.
Do you have a quote for us today, Brian?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
So this one's more contemporary, comes to us from Dwayne The Rock.
The Rock.
Johnson.
Yes. What did he say?
Wake up determined and go to bed satisfied.
I like it.
I do too.
Very simple.
You know, I was over coffee when I'm still drinking still some coffee this morning here. I was talking about how sometimes I'm so determined that I, in the morning, mm-hmm. right, that I'm not thinking about what is my own personal wellness. I'm like, oh, I got to do this and I got to do that and I got to do the other right. thing, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm determined from that perspective. Also, I think it's important to be determined about, you know, your own level of happiness and satisfaction.
Mm-hmm. Yes. What am I doing today to bring me that satisfaction?
What is it that you can achieve today that is going to leave you feeling satisfied when you go to sleep? Because that's going to be helping you live your best life.
I like it.
Yeah.
Okay, so how do we find profitable ASINs?
We test.
Test.
We test more ASINs.
Let's go test more ASINs.
All right, let's do it.
All right.
Thanks, everyone.
Take care, you guys. Talk to you soon.
Hey, thanks for joining us for today's episode. But before I let you go, like we like to do once a week or so around here, I want to bring on my good friend, Mr. Jeff Schick of jeffschick.com. There's a link in the show notes, but he is an Amazon policy and legal expert, serves so many in our community. The vast majority of the leaders on our team are using his services. And we get such great results. He's just a fountain of information. What do you got for us today, Jeff? What topic's on your mind?
So this topic's kind of interesting. This is a topic that we see maybe once every few years. It's not, you know, I've had it happen a couple times, but it's just an interesting scenario. So a lot of us are trying to cut costs. And so sometimes you realize that you might have more Prime memberships than you're used to having. So you might have a personal Prime and you might have a business Prime. So you call up Amazon Business Prime, you say, hey, I want to turn off my service. They say, that's great. Do you want to turn off your Prime membership or do you want to close your account and turn off your Prime membership? Not thinking much of it, you say, oh, just go ahead and close my Business Prime account. I'm not going to use it. I've got a personal
one. This is for shopping.
I'm
turning off my shopping Prime privileges.
Yes.
Thinking it's not going to affect my seller account at all.
Correct. Then next thing you know, 2 days go by, everything is fine. And 2 days later, you go to log into Amazon Seller Central and it says no Seller Central account found. And they call us and they say, oh my gosh, what's gone wrong?
Send a letter, make a phone call.
Right. Yes. The answer, which is unfortunate, is that when you turn off a buyer account, like you close a buyer account, it actually deletes your ability to log into Seller Central. So your Seller Central account is not suspended. It's not terminated. It's not closed. But you're stuck in a limbo phase, because what a lot of people don't realize is that when you log into your Seller Central account, or any Amazon service for that matter, could be AWS, could be Vendor Central, Seller Central, whatever, you are always sent to your buyer account first. That's where you enter your username and password. You get your two-factor authentication, and then they send you back to whatever service you're requesting. So if you close that buyer account, you can't log in to any Amazon services that were associated with that buyer account. And what happens is it creates new accounts. After that, there's a two-day, 48-hour period where they're deleting the records from the system. And after that's over, you go to log in and it starts creating new accounts. Because when you click log in with your buyer account username and password that you had closed, it says we can't find any resources for this account anymore. And so it just starts creating new ones. So it creates a new buyer account. That new buyer account then can't access your existing seller account. So everything you had access to before, you lose access to.
It creates a real mess. Yeah.
A huge headache.
To delete your shopping account as an Amazon shopper, as a buyer, to delete that without knowing what you're doing and paying attention to the detail, you could really impact your selling business. Gotcha. So how do we prevent this? Can you prevent this, or do I just have to pay for Prime the rest of my life if I'm a Prime shopper?
So if you have two Prime accounts, you've got a personal Prime and a business Prime, you can turn off your Prime membership. Like you can say, stop billing my credit card for the, I think it's $269 a year or whatever they're charging these days. And that's fine. Just don't close the shopping account that's associated with it. Keep it open. Keep your Amazon business account open, all that good stuff. Just turn off your Prime feature so that you're not paying the annual fee. Or view it like insurance, keep it going and just turn off your personal Prime, and switch everything over. So that way you're even more insulated. Also a good reminder for people, I do this personally with my Amazon seller account. I actually have a full user backup, which is me. So I've got two email addresses. Like I've got a college email and I've got my regular Amazon email. And my college email has two-factor authentication turned on. It uses my cell phone as well. And then it's got a really strong password. I recommend, 12 to 16 characters with, numbers, uppercase, lowercase, and symbols. So that way you've maximum safety for keeping your account safe. But that's a full secondary user. It has full admin rights. Every permission is granted. The whole purpose of that secondary account is so that if I get locked out of my first account, like let's say I lock myself out because I forget my password and need them to send me a password reset postcard or something like that, I still have my secondary user account that I can log into, do everything that needs to be done. In this sort of scenario, if the seller that we're helping out had that secondary user set up, they could have gone in and created a case and said, help me, I locked myself out of my personal account, get someone at tech support to help me create a new user login. And they could have gotten through that secondary admin, they could have gotten the primary admin's email address and password changed so that they got regained access to their seller account via a new buyer account.
Makes unfortunately. Total sense. I think some people might have to rewind and listen to what you just said, but let me say it in layman's terms real quick, make sure I understood you, Jeff.
Right.
Even if you're the only person using your seller account, set up a secondary admin account, which is easily done, to a different email address. So you got another way in the back door to the same account if something happens to your primary login ID.
Exactly. Just like, people keep, they give you two sets of keys to your car when you buy it for a reason. You've got your primary keys and the ones that you keep in the kitchen drawer. Right. That's that way, if you get locked out, you can still drive home.
Great analogy. Yeah.
Think of it as, this is your secondary key that you're keeping in the kitchen drawer. Password, you want to keep extremely secure. Mm-hmm. May write it down on a note card or something. You keep it in a drawer. I probably wouldn't keep it on your computer just because the risk of, people hacking these days, but
keep it on a post-it note right next to your Bitcoin passwords, right? Yeah.
Wherever people store their stuff securely, if you got a gun safe, put it in there, whatever it may, sure. That is your safe thing. And then of course you definitely want two-factor authentication set up, ideally have a text message authentication. So that way it sends you a text. Reason being is that this is your secondary account. You're not going to use it all the time. So if you set it up with like Google Authenticator, you may forget that you've set it up with two-factor, like is on that account. And if you get a brand new cell phone, you might forget to transfer. And then next thing you know, you're locked out of your primary. You go to log into the secondary. And if you only had your old cell phone as there's two-factor authentication, well, now you're still stuck. You can't log in. So having that cell phone where it sends you a text message, one-time password, or sends you an email, that would be recommended. Yeah. So that way you get it. If you've got like a spouse or significant other, you might, you know, add them as a secondary as well for that account. So that way they get the, you know, you have multiple phones that could receive that message if something goes wrong.
Man, that's it. Yeah, that's a great solution, elegant solution that keeps you out of this situation. And it's good to know that I don't have to be a prime customer for life in order to be an Amazon seller. But so we often tell people, hey, the two accounts are completely disconnected. I think we need to tweak that just a little bit because that's not actually 100% true. Your buyer and your seller account being disconnected. Could I get my, here's an interesting one for you. We didn't set this up beforehand, but can I get myself in trouble as a shopper? Could, you know, not that I intend to do this. We don't do this, but I've heard of people that like become return happy. They just make so many returns that Amazon actually suspends them from being able to buy anything on Amazon. And as sellers, we applaud when that happens. But if that person also had a selling account, would it be at risk then if you lose your buying privileges, do you think?
That was one of the cases I dealt with about a year ago. Your seller was return happy on Amazon on the buyer side, got their buyer account suspended. And because they had, you know, you log into your buyer account to get into your seller account, every time they would go to Seller Central and they'd click log in, they'd type in their username and password, and then it would come back and say, you're not authorized to use Amazon services because the buyer account was terminated.
Asked a pretty good question there. I like that.
Yeah. So I like, you know, it's actually kind of funny you say that. When I first bought my first house in 2018, I was buying all sorts of stuff off Amazon. And then I want to say I made like 5 returns of different things because like, oh, this didn't fit right. This wasn't the right, you know, I think I was making like kitchen drawer organizers and stuff like that. And then an article came out in the Wall Street Journal that was talking about Amazon is using new software to flag people that return too much stuff. Right. That's when I first started looking into it. I was like, wait a second, if I get my buyer account suspended, what happens to the seller account? I'm like, you know what? I don't really want to find out. So started just donating stuff that didn't work to Goodwill. And
flip it on eBay, figure out something else to do with it. If you don't like it, you don't want to become known as a trigger happy refunder, refund seeker. If you're a seller.
Good. Yeah, so be really careful with making returns. Definitely is an important thing.
Fantastic, man. Well, you always have such interesting stories and insights. Thank you. I learned something new today. I'm sure the listeners did as well. And it's always a pleasure having you on the show. Thanks for being a great sponsor of the podcast, man.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
We'll do it again next week. JeffShick.com, spelled just like the razor. Check it out. For just a few dollars a month, he can really help you out with any of these legal challenges, policy issues you run into. Very helpful for our team and many others in our community. All right. Can't wait to see you in Orlando, Jeff.
See you in Orlando. I can't wait. I got to book my tickets this week.
Yeah. Lock it in. Listeners, too. We'll see you in Orlando, May 23rd through 25th, 2024. And we'll do this again next week, Jeff. Talk to you soon.
Thank you.
See you, buddy.
Thank you for listening to Silent Sales Machine Radio. Visit silentjim.com for a link to our free newsletter, our free Facebook group, and all of our resources mentioned on today's show.